This is Harry Murray and Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia, with our 10th podcast on February the 19th. What we've been doing thus far is going through the season and discussing the tactics that we use on the small streams. Then there'd be a separate podcast on what we do in the larger streams. We're going to continue with that podcast format. Today we're going to be talking about the small streams. These are streams that are probably 10 to 20 feet wide. The pools might be 10 to 20 feet long. Oh, some of them I like a whole lot. Abrams Creek down in North Carolina, Little Sam and Little Chazy up in New York. All those streams draining out of the Absarokee and out in Montana and the Crazy Mountains, all those are what I call small mountain freestone streams. Now, we're going to start today, the 1st of September, and fish our way all the way to the end of the season, all the way to the end of December. Now, what happens in early September in many of these streams is that we just don't have good water levels. The streams are low, the fish are spooky, the fishing is tough. Now, what you have to do is just dress appropriately. You wear camouflage, no, not real camouflage clothing, but more subdued clothing. You never false cast over the pool. You'll dry your fly to the side and then shoot your fly out over the pool. Little things like that help you a whole lot. Maybe even go into your hands and knees on some of these pools. Now, the one thing that's so great for us at this time of the year is the nights are getting cooler. When this happens, the water temperature drops from that warm level that the fish were not real thrilled with in August to a more comfortable feeding level. So that prompts the trout to feed pretty aggressively. Another thing that's going in our favor at this time of the year is the fact that there's a good abundance of food. We have a lot of the terrestrials that we've had all year, all through the summer, the ants, the beetles, the hoppers, the crickets, and all that. All that that we've had all summer is still with us at this time of the year. Now, if you're in an area that you have browns and brookies, those guys are going to be spawning before long. So those three things prompt the trout to feed a whole lot more actively than they did even in August. Now, the one problem that we're faced with, as I mentioned, is that low water level. What this does to a lot of the larger trout encourages them to cruise throughout the pool to get the food they want. Simply holding on a feeding station probably isn't going to bring them all the food they want. So they'll go out and cruise around the pool and pick up the food they need. I usually refer to this as mid-mountain. For instance, my mountains here in this part of the Virginia range from 4,000 feet up on top of the mountain down to where I'm start fishing maybe at 1,000. So mid-mountain is what I'm talking about at 2,000 to 3,000 feet. There are a lot of high gradient pools in there. You may have a small drainage coming down, but when it hits these high gradient areas, you'll have a relatively large pool for the size of the stream. In there, the big fish will cruise and cruise and cruise and just pick up any kind of food on the surface. Now, there are two different ways you can fish this. You can watch that trout cruising across the pool, picking up a beetle here, an ant there, and there he goes, not seeing the fish, but seeing the rise forms. One way to capture that guy is to shoot, anticipate those rise forms. He's feeding from your right to his left. He's taking a fly here. He's taking a natural there. He's taking a natural there. Shoot your cast out in front of where you think he's going. This works part of the time. The problem is you don't know exactly which way he's going because he doesn't know exactly which way he's going. He's geared to what the food is, and you can't see those little bugs out there on the water. So you might cast to the wrong spot, and he zigs when you think he's going to zag, or even worse, you hit him right between the eyes. So I've used that system sometime. What I would much prefer to do is to spot that trout. Now, we had a podcast several months ago where we were actually talking about how to spot the trout in the stream. Well, this guy's pretty easy to spot relative. All you may spook him, but I think that's worth the risk. So try to actually spot these fish. That's my favorite game. In fact, this is probably one of my favorite ways to fish all year. See that individual trout out there cruising across. Drop a little beetle or a little ant, Ed Shanks cricket out in front of him. Now, you want to stay small. You're talking about staying down in 16s and 18s. I use the Murray's Flying Beetle size 16 a whole lot for this. But cast it out in front of where you actually see him cruising. And that is a very, very effective tactic. And it's a whole lot of fun. And usually these are some of the bigger fish. Now, later in September, normally we pick up some rain, and this causes a different feeding situation completely. The trout will now drop back on feeding stations, usually in the tail of the pool or the lip of the pool, because as the rains lift the streams a little bit, now the food is forced into these channels that we all knew back last April. These fish will lie there and sip in any food that's pushed to them. Again, I usually go to the beetles and the crickets because they work. But they'll be back on the lips of the pools and the tails of the pools. And before I leave each pool, I look carefully to see if there's a substantial back eddy over either on the right or the left, because many of those trout that have been cruising around the big pools have sort of gotten the habit of feeding that way, and many of these trout will move into those back eddies to cruise around and pick up anything that's back there. So before you leave that pool, look carefully at the back eddies, and it's easy to tell. If you've got a substantial back eddy, there's a trout in it, you're going to see them back there rising, because like I say, at this time of the year, you still have a good abundance of food. Now, as the season progresses, we'll get on down, in my country, this is probably early October, some of the leaves starting to come down now, and these leaves collect in the tails of the pools in what I call leaf jams. These will be where the major part of the flow will come down. The leaves collect in the, throughout the pool, but the current pushes them back in the tail of the pool. Immediately upstream of these leaf jams, there'll be a little natural shelf, usually a foot wide or so, on the upstream edge of these leaf jams. Now, you with me? We got leaves stacked up in the back. You got sort of a little shelf sticking upstream. The big trout will always get under the front edge of those little leaf jams and pick up anything coming along. This is probably the most perfect feeding station you and I will ever see. And where there's a substantial current bringing them in, they'll just sit there and feed all day, all day, all day. So when I come into the tail of these pools, I stop for a few minutes and actually look along the front, because sometimes it's difficult to tell exactly from left to right where these guys are going to be. So I'll pause for a minute, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, to see where the rise form is. Then I go one-on-one with these trout. Now, if I don't see a rise form after a minute or two, I'll go ahead and drift my beetle, we'll say, into the front edge of these leaf jams all the way across the pool. I'll start on the left and maybe, depending on the width of the stream, maybe make as many as a half dozen casts to the various points along that leaf jam to pick up whatever's there. Depending on your geographical location, we can usually get some good dry fly fishing until about mid-November. Again, the predominant food is going to be the terrestrial thing, so I use those same flies we've been talking about. So they could be spread throughout the pool, so think about fishing throughout the pool, but think about especially back on the lip and the tail like we discussed. Now, if you're fishing a stream that has a good spring flowing into it, 2 or 3 good springs, I just looked at a couple dandies the other evening. These guys are going to have some blue-winged ollies. The Betis vagans are going to be hatching at this time of the year. This can be outstanding, and where these hatches are big enough, they'll bring up some of the very biggest fish. Now, this that little olive thing is what we usually call it. Vince Marinaro used to always tell me, don't you overlook the little ollies. Don't you ever overlook the little ollies. It's Vince's favorite hatch. I used to fish the sulfur and the bay and the tricos and everything with Vince, but Vince's favorite hatch was the olive. Now, the only thing about the olive, it's got a mind of its own. You could go to the same stream, the same area, 5 days in a row, you might see it 2 days and not the rest of the time. Or you may see it every day you go for a week, and then you may go for a week and never see it again. So it's got a mind of its own. Usually overcast days bring it on. I've had some terrific Betis hatch, even out in Montana in snowstorms. I had some friends into one stream with me out there, snowing so doggone hard you couldn't make a long cast because it was snowing so hard you couldn't see your fly on the water. And the olives were everywhere. Now, this is moody even in regards to different parts of the same stream. William Downey and I were fishing a little spring creek in Pennsylvania some time ago. We parked the car at the regular parking place. Willie went down, I went up, met back the car a couple hours later to get something to eat. Downey said, that's the best Betis fishing I have ever had in my life. He said, I've never seen that many fish coming up, never have seen that many flies. I was probably fishing a quarter of a mile from where he was. I did not see a single olive, and I did not see a single rising fish. And if you'd walk up and down that stream and look at the quality of the water, the cover, everything would look exactly alike. Yet there we were within stone's throw of each other. He had a terrific hatch, and I had none at all. But now that's the nature of the beast of the olive. But don't ever overlook the little olives. Okay, by November, the streams are starting to get, the water temperature is going to drop on you. Throughout November and all the way into the end of the year, the water temperature has dropped enough that a lot of these guys have really moved off their normal feeding stations. Many of them are going to hunker down in some of the deep parts of the pool. You're probably going to do a whole lot better with nymphs and streamers this time of the year. Now, there are two different tactics I use on these mountain freestone streams on the nymphs. The first one is the upstream dead drift nymphing. Now, what we're doing here is moving up the stream. We're casting upstream ahead of us, maybe even on a good sized stream, maybe a pool that's 20 feet long. You're probably going to cast up toward the head of it to give your fly time to sink down. I like the casual dress a whole lot and about a size 10 or 12. That Murray 10 caddis pupa in a 10 and a 12 and a 14 is a terrific fly for this kind of thing. Okay, so we're fishing up these streams in the bigger pools. You're going to a 9-foot 5X bright butt leader, and I put two scientific anchor indicators in there. I'll put the first one about 3 feet above the fly and the second one about 6 feet above the fly. This way, no matter what depth that thing's coming back to me, I can see. And I'm casting up to the head of the pool, letting it drift back naturally, maybe stripping it just a wee bit faster than the current to make sure I'm tight to it, because this strike you have to actually see. If you wait till you feel it, you're going to miss the majority of these strikes. But upstream dead drift, it's drifting back to you. You're staying tight at least to the second indicator, the lower indicator. And you even think you see that indicator do something squirrely. You set the hook as quickly as you can. Now, the second nymphing technique depends on being in a little bit larger pool. This is the one I call the swing nymphing thing. This is the one the kids in the school take a lot of their fish with because they can actually feel this strike. Now, if you don't know what I'm calling swing nymphing, this is my miniature version of old Charlie Brooks's method. You got a pretty good size pool. Water out in the middle might be 3 feet deep, maybe a little more. The pool might be 20 feet long, 20 feet wide, and you can sneak up the bank. Now, what you want to do is position yourself immediately beside where you think those fish are going to be holding. And as I said, at this time of the year, that's usually the deepest part of the pool. You're going to cast upstream to the head of the pool. Give that fly time to sink down deeply. Then get your rod tip up in the air. We're not fishing it yet. Get a time to sink. Get the rod tip up in the air. And then swing that rod tip back just a wee bit faster than the current's pushing it back. Now, I still use the bright butt leader and the SA indicators to help me just see what's going on. But I'm really trying to feel this strike. The strike will come if you've set yourself up at the right place when you are right, when the fly is right beside you. And cover that pool. Maybe you might want a fan's 6-8 cast back and forth across that pool with this swing nymphing thing. Staying low. Now, you may be on your hands and knees on the side of the pool, but this is very effective. You're going to have your nymph right there in front of them, and this will take a lot of those fish holding deeply at this time of the year. Now, streamers. Not a thing in the world wrong with streamers this time of the year. Streamers, obviously, we're going to go down to a little bit smaller flies, something like the Olive Strength and a 10, the Betsy Streamer 10-12. Pearl Marauder is real good this time of the year in a 10 and a 12. Now, of course, we're talking about flies that will imitate the various minnows. Now, this is much like the upstream dead drift nymphing because you're going to cast upstream to where your fly will fall into the deepest part of the pool. Let it drift back with the current. You've got to strip that line in with your line hand so you're tight all the way down to it because you would really like to try to feel this strike. But like I say now, I got those SA indicators out there. If I can see it, more the merrier. But I'm really hoping to feel this strike. Now, in many cases, I'll use what I call that bounce retrieve, which is about every, say, 5 feet of the drift. I'll lift the rod tip 2 to 3 feet to kind of swim that fly up off the bottom. What I hope I'm doing here is making that fly act like a real minnow. This will often trigger strikes that you're not going to get just simply on a dead drift. And just work your way up the stream doing this on the bigger pools. This is very, very effective. Now, if you're fishing in country that has browns and brook trout, we don't like to really fish to them when they're spawning. And in most of the country I fish, this is from mid-October to mid-November. So we just sort of let them do their thing at that time of the year rather than stress them. Many of you have asked about what size tackle I use on these small streams. I usually use a rod about 6.5 to 7.5 feet long with a delicate tip, but still handling a number 3 line. Now, that pretty well covers what I wanted to talk about today. The next podcast will be number 11, and I'm going to talk about the larger streams from September until the end of the year. If you have any questions on any of this, I've had some real good feedback from you all. Call me at 540-984-4212, and I'll be glad to help you on any of this. Thank you very much. This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia.